Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life.
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my 11th episode. My objective for this podcast is to delve into the themes of horror, both real and imagined. Each episode will cover one movie in depth based on a theme of the month. My January theme is Be Careful What You Wish For. This is basically the theme for the next 4 years. A quick layout of this podcast. Each episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I get into the true crime of it all. I am a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. If you're new here, I've made it my job to spoil the shit out of this movie. If you don't want it spoiled, like the raw chicken that's been sitting in my refrigerator for 5 days, you should pause this, watch the movie, and then come back where you left off. Or you can listen to the synopsis of the movie and get the gist of it all. Maybe you decide this is worth watching afterwards and you watch the movie knowing everything about it. That's cool too, whatever you're into. In today's episode, I will be covering the 1996 classic, The Craft, directed and written by Andrew Fleming, with co-writer Peter Filardi, starring Robin Tunney, Feruza Balt, Rachel True, and our scream queen, Neve Campbell. I will place a trigger warning here about suicide and sexual assault. If you are struggling with thoughts of self-harm, call or text 988 for help. If you've been a victim of sexual assault, you can call 800-656-4673. You are not alone. Some trivia facts about this film. The movie had a budget of $15 million and it grossed about $25 million worldwide. While this might not be the gory version of horror, we do have killing, revenge, witchcraft, and malevolent intent, which are all horror content. I will admit that this film is light on the horror and heavy on the femme fatale, but that's what we show up for. Technically, this is teen horror, and I was a teen when it came out, so it was made for me. Well, I was 9 when it came out, so I was definitely watching it, but I didn't start living it until my preteen years. Those were dark times. In 2017, Andrew Fleming stated that Charmed ripped off this film. Fleming revealed that he wrote a pilot based on the movie for Fox, in which the WB was also strongly interested, and that it was his idea to have How Soon Is Now as the title theme. The pilot was not picked up, and the following year, Charmed premiered. Furthermore, Robin Tunney stated the ripoff was completely obvious to the point that people would think I was on Charmed for years after. By the way, I was also obsessed with Charmed and never missed an episode as a teenager. The shots of Nancy being covered in bugs were created by wrapping a life cast of Feruza Balk's head and torso in green screen material. The bugs were filmed crawling all over the cast and then digitally composited on top of a live action plate of Balk. The tagline for this movie, "Welcome to the Witching Hour." Let's set the scene with the synopsis of the movie.
To the other kids at St. Bernard Academy, they were the girls who didn't belong.
Whatever you do, stay away from them.
Why?
They're witches.
But after years of being on the outside...
Why'd you lie about me?
I don't want to go out with you again. Please, stop begging. It's pathetic.
Four girls are about to discover the dark side.
You ever heard of invoking the spirit?
Black magic.
We can make things happen. I mean, this is it. This is real.
Columbia Pictures welcomes you to the Witching Hour.
Sarah Bailey just moved from San Francisco to Los Angeles with her father and stepmother. She enrolls in a local Catholic high school, but has trouble fitting in. During French class, her classmates Bonnie witnesses Sarah telekinetically rotate a pencil while standing on its tip. During lunch, Sarah is hit on by Chris, the school's football star. She asks about Bonnie and her two friends, Nancy and Rochelle. Chris tells Sarah to stay away from the trio because they're witches. Bonnie tells Nancy and Rochelle that Sarah is the fourth, who will complete their circle and make a full coven. The three girls each have issues. Nancy lives in a trailer with her mom and abusive stepfather Ray. Bonnie has massive burn scars all over her back, and the painful treatment recommended by the surgeon is likely to fail. Rochelle is the target of racist taunts by Laura Lizzie, the most popular girl at school. Chris invites Sarah to watch him at football practice after school. After school, the trio runs into Sarah, saying that he will come on to anything with tits. The girls befriend Sarah and take her to an occult shop. The owner, Lirio, comments that Sarah is not like the other girls and says to her, "Maybe you are a natural witch. Your powers come from within." While leaving the shop, Sarah is harassed by a vagrant, and all four girls simultaneously will for something to happen. The vagrant is then hit by a car. The girls escape, and Nancy is thrilled at their connection. Nancy tells Sarah about invoking the spirit Mana, which is their ultimate goal as a coven. Later, Sarah meets up with Chris, but refuses to have sex with him. The next day at school, Sarah discovers that Chris boasted to the whole school that they slept together and that she was the worst he'd ever had. Nancy, Bonnie, and Rochelle comfort Sarah and invite her on a field trip. They take the bus out to the country. The bus driver tells them to be careful of weirdos. Nancy responds, "We are the weirdos, mister." Well, in the countryside, they call the corners and cast spells.
Earth, air, fire, water, water, air, 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 water, earth, air, fire, water, earth, air, fire.
It is better that you should rush upon this blade than enter the circle with fear in your heart. How do you enter?
With perfect love and perfect trust.
Rochelle asks for the strength not to hate those who hate her. Sarah performs a love spell on Chris. Bonnie asks for beauty inside and out. And Nancy asks for all the power of Mana. Shortly after the spells are cast, they show signs of working. Chris becomes infatuated with Sarah and does anything she asks despite being ordered around. Bonnie's scars miraculously heal. And the next time Laura bullies Rochelle, Laura's hair begins to fall out. At home, Nancy causes the microwave and all light bulbs to explode, and Ray suffers a massive heart attack and dies. Then Nancy and her mother are told by the insurance man that they have inherited $175,000 from an insurance policy, and they feel overjoyed about it. Nancy and her mother move into a posh high-rise where the girls meet one night and learn disguise-changing magic. The girls go to the shop again, where Nancy finds a book about invoking the spirit. Later that night, the girls go to the beach and form a circle, calling on Mana. At the culmination of the spell, Nancy is struck by lightning. The next day, the rest of the girls witness Nancy walking on water.
You feel that? You blessed me. I can feel him running through my veins. He's still in me. So amazing.
And from this point on, Nancy becomes mad with power. Sarah's love spell backfires on her when she goes on a dinner date with Chris, and he takes her to the top of a hill attempting to rape her. Sarah runs away and knocks on Nancy's door. Nancy leaves her home for a party Chris is attending in order to punish him. However, when she arrives at the party, she tries to seduce Chris by disguising herself as Sarah. When the real Sarah arrives, as they engage in foreplay, Nancy becomes enraged, yelling at Chris that he is nothing and nobody. That all he does is use girls and he is going to pay for all he's done. The French doors open and Chris is seemingly pushed out of the third story window by an unseen force, resulting in his death.
What do you care?
Nancy, get off the bed. Look, you scared the shit out of him. Thank you very much. Let's go.
No, he's gonna pay.
You're just jealous.
Jealous? Jealous? You don't even exist to me.
You don't even exist. You are nothing. You are shit.
Because of this, Sarah pulls away from the coven. She tries to stop Nancy, who has become the leader of the three remaining witches, by binding her powers so that she won't be able to hurt others or herself. But her spell fails, and Nancy starts to target her. Nancy gives an ominous threat that, in the old days, if a witch betrayed her coven, they would kill her. Needing help, Sarah goes to Lirio, who tells her to invoke the spirit herself. Lirio also reveals that Sarah's mother was a powerful witch, and that her talent has passed on to Sarah. Sarah starts to invoke Manal, but she has a vision of fire in the shop exploding, so she leaves the shop terrified. When she gets home, she receives a call instructing her to turn on the TV set, and hears that her dad was in a plane accident and there aren't any survivors. As she rushes upstairs, snakes, worms, roaches, and rats appear all through her house. Nancy, Bonnie, and Rochelle burst into the house, flying high on their new powers.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Go away, please. Stop it. Gotcha.
Nancy tries to intimidate Sarah and tells her to commit suicide. When Bonnie and Rochelle go to check on Sarah, they pass by a mirror and see their actions coming back to them by three. Sarah has invoked Manon and fights back, showing the trio the consequences of misusing their power. Bonnie and Rochelle run out of the house afraid that they have upset Manon. Nancy goes upstairs to finish off Sarah. Sarah is able to successfully bind Nancy from doing harm against herself and harm to others.
What's going on? Why aren't you dead? You came to me. Saved me. Oh, and he wanted me to give you a message. You're in deep shit. He says you've abused what he's given you, and now you're gonna have to pay the price.
In the end, Nancy is sent to a psychiatric hospital, and Bonnie and Rochelle lose any powers they had. The girls come to see if Sarah still has any powers. When they mockingly question her abilities, Sarah makes a bolt of lightning strike, causing a tree branch to fall. As they stare back at her in shock, she warns them, "Be careful. You don't want to end up like Nancy."
He gave me power! I can do whatever I want now! I can fly! I can... Ow! Ow! Ow!
Gave you something up, but it ain't the power.
But I can fly! I'm flying! I'm flying! I'm flying! I'm flying!
Now it's time to talk horror, and my guest today is Sarah. She is part of my coven and my first female guest. Do you believe in your witchy powers?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to, right? Or else what's the point?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's fun. It's fun to believe in, you know, the whole female empowerment which is linked to being called a witch. And so as a teenager, because like watching this movie always takes me back to my teenage years, how I was then, and like, did I believe in my witchy woman powers at that point? And I definitely did a lot more then than I do now.
There was definitely part of me that was like, I mean, it's got to be real. Like, maybe I can't do it, but it's got to be real. Otherwise, they wouldn't make movies about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. As a kid, like, you're way more open-minded about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you know, like, especially all this other fairy tale shit that you're being – is being pushed down your throat. It's like, well, if you want me to believe in the Tooth Fairy
and Santa Claus, why can't I believe that I could fly if I wanted to?
Yeah.
Why not?
You want me to believe in God? You want me to believe in the Bible? And, like, there's all this, like, crazy shit happening that I'm supposed to, like – throw away logic for that, so why can't I throw away logic for this?
It's like, no, it only has to be when it's something meant to punish you. Like,
mm-hmm.
Not allowed to make believe for fun.
In the beginning of the movie, there's like that man, the vagrant man that's chasing Sarah.
With the snake, yes. Yes,
with the snake. He comes back twice.
He does.
In the movie. But then all the girls are together the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, no, okay. So the first time was, like, at her house, and he knocks on her door, and he's like, I'm having visions of you.
Yeah, and he, like, appears in the doorway and surprises her, and then she screams for her dad, and her dad chases him out with a fire poker.
Yeah. And then the second time, she sees him on the streets, and he's chasing her again, trying to give her some message. But all the girls... they
leave her behind.
Huh?
They just leave her behind. They're like, keep up. And then they just walk off.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. They definitely, I felt like they were not there to support her. But then after, and it's one of those things where, like, I don't know that it always translated on screen, but they were saying that they were all, they had the same thought. They wanted him to be harmed. They wanted something to happen to him. And then he gets hit by the car.
Right.
So, like, after he gets hit by the car, they, like, kind of go over, scoop her up, and they run out into the woods. And they talk about how they all had the same thought. And they were, like, celebrating, like, they had, like, a rush of, like, they willed this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Did, as a teen or, like, preteen, all this kind of stuff, did you ever feel like you willed something to happen and it happened?
Okay, listen, I am a big advocate of being delusional. I still feel like I secretly will things to happen every once in a while where I'm like, you know what? I put that out into the universe and the universe gave it back to me. And that could be entirely horseshit, but it's keeping me sane. So yes, absolutely. I 100% thought I was like willing things to happen. I know now that it's more just of a mentality thing, but as a kid, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. No, there were so many things where I was like, I wanted this to happen and it happened. I have powers.
I'm a witch.
Able to control the dimensions and reality.
By the power of three times three.
Yeah. It hits so hard. Like that scene where they all get together and they're just celebrating how they caused this to happen. And it's like, oh my God, you're like, this is such a teenage girl, like delusion.
But it's. You know, our desire to feel powerful and to have control over something at a time in our lives where a lot of wacky shit is happening to our bodies and our minds and we don't understand it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think that is a really good connection as a teenage girl. Like, you don't have control of your emotions. A lot of things are changing. And so being able to, I don't know, just feeling like you have a little bit of control.
Yeah, that you've been given back some level of power that, you know, all of your decisions are made by your teachers or your parents and your peers that pressure you into doing things. And so it's a nice fantasy to say, I made this happen. I did this. I have this power.
I agree. I 100% agree. But let's be real. He was a guy chasing a teenage girl in the middle of a busy street in New York. Or where were they? No.
San Francisco.
San Francisco, sorry.
No, they came from San Francisco.
She moved to LA.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Either way, it was a busy street in California somewhere.
Yeah. And like you're chasing a teenage girl down the street and out into the road. Things happen.
Yeah. Chances are you're going to get hit by a car.
Yeah. There are cars in the street, whether teenage girls want them to be or not. So.
Yes. It's not like he was on the sidewalk.
Yeah. And it's not like he's in a house and someone plowed through the front door in an SUV or something.
Yeah.
Well, and I think at this point they've already all had bad stuff happen. I can't remember, but I think at this point, like, they've already shown Nancy's living situation and Bonnie's scars. I can't remember if she goes in for the experimental procedure yet.
No, she doesn't yet, but yeah, they do show.
They show that everyone's in a position where they don't feel powerful.
Yeah.
And it's this moment where they all connect to each other and they all like bond when they just like left her behind to be attacked by a guy with a snake in the street. Now they're like, oh my God, we're all together and we're all part of this and we're all powerful because we're together. And I'm pretty sure also before that, Nancy didn't want a fourth.
No, she didn't. She was really mean to Sarah in the beginning, like in the lab, whenever
and Bonnie,
Sarah goes up to them.
And Bonnie tells her multiple times, I think we're getting a fourth. I think we found our fourth. And she says, we don't need a fourth. I don't want a fourth. We're fine.
Yeah. Nancy is a really layered character. Mm-hmm. Like, she kind of transforms. And there are a few moments with her where, you know, we can have a lot of sympathy for her in the beginning. Like, she comes from a really broken household.
Yeah.
That her stepdad's, like, obviously abusive, like, verbally, but also it looks like in certain scenes they don't full on show the physical abuse, but you can tell, like, mom is flinching whenever he approaches her and stuff like that. So you know there's
And he's, like, grabbing at her happening. Robe and lifting it up and, like, making sexual comments to her. And,
He's grotesque.
Yeah.
He's grotesque. And so you have a lot of sympathy for her there. Mm-hmm. And you can see why she has this, like, inward hatred towards everything and everyone. And she feels, like, I'm sure she feels let down. And she feels like everything is just shit and there's nothing good for her will ever happen type thing.
And that this and that, like, you know, embracing her power and doing the things she does with it is the only way to fix it.
Yeah.
I thought it was so fascinating when they go back after her stepdad dies mysteriously. And they have this new apartment and her mom is still, like, throwing herself around and talking about the jukebox and everything. And you just look at Nancy's face and she's still miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still just unhappy and like slamming the door in her mom's face.
Yeah.
And walking away. And you can just tell, like, you know.
Yeah. And maybe the mom's still,
but you're not happy.
Yeah. The mom's still alone in the world. And I kind of like that scene specifically where she's, like, so excited to show all these, like, off her new toys and everything that she's doing or has, but then in the end she's still alone. She's being shut out by her daughter. She doesn't have anyone. It's really sad for the mom.
Like, you understand that, like, okay, this is who Nancy sees her as, is like this bad presence and this person making her life worse, but you also kind of just are like, well, she doesn't seem like she's living her best life right now. Like, doesn't she deserve a little bit of sympathy? She was married to a piece of shit asshole who, like, wanted to nail her daughter. Like, I wouldn't be happy in that situation either.
I think that, you know, really goes into the theme of, like, generational trauma when it comes to Nancy's character. Like, her mom obviously has trauma that she's passed on to Nancy. And she wants, now that they came into this money, she wants to believe that she is giving Nancy a better life. But unfortunately, Nancy is already, I don't know how old they're supposed to be. I'm going to assume 16, 17 in the movie.
I always assumed like 17, 18. I assumed they were seniors, maybe juniors.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, probably seniors. So like 17.
Yeah.
We'll say 17.
Yeah.
But, you know, at 17, you've already had all your core you know, memory is all, like, your personality is already formed. Mm-hmm. You can't throw money at that and just make all that trauma go away.
Yeah.
I was glad to see that dynamic in there just because, I don't know, it's so real and yeah. raw. And a lot of people who are drawn to the darker side of things, like, this is the reality that they come from.
Yeah. Quick question.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you really think $175,000 of a life insurance policy is going to last them in an apartment like that?
Okay, yeah. So they have a high rise in California.
Yeah.
A high rise like in downtown California. LA,
presumably.
Yeah. That doesn't come cheap.
No, it does not.
Before I answer that question, I actually have some information in here. And I want to ask you. So there's $175,000 in 1996. Okay, so that was 1996. What do you think that's equivalent to in 2025?
$357,000.
How? You already looked
it up. I did look it up. I'm sorry.
You looked it up.
I looked it up during the movie. Because okay. I was like, because when I saw it, I was like, okay, that is not, like, sure, that's a lot of money, especially for someone in their circumstances, but that is mm-hmm. not that much money. And mm-mm. I think that's kind of, like, it plays into the theme of, like, you know, okay, you got what you want, but do you know what to do with it when you have it?
Yeah.
Like, when yeah. they get this power, do they know what to do with it? When she gets this money, do they know what to do with it? The answer is no.
Yeah.
Because they just blow it on whatever they think is going to make their lives what they want.
She's living in the past is yeah. kind of how I saw it. Like, she has, she's like, I always wanted this. And, you know, instead of moving forward and trying to do better,
mm-hmm.
they're kind of going back.
She's just trying to give herself everything she thought she wanted rather than what's actually going to make mine and my daughter's life better.
Yeah.
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 It's really sad.
Yeah, it is sad.
There's a line. It's right after the guy with the snake
mm-hmm.
When they're all sitting around and they're talking about the power that they have. And Sarah says, nothing makes everything all better again. And Nancy says, maybe not for you. Well, okay, this isn't really technically relevant. But something I noticed after Nancy goes home from that,
mm-hmm.
When she goes in and her stepdad's being an asshole and her mom's drunk and she goes in to lay on her bed, when yeah. she first walks into the house in the very beginning of the movie, the roof is leaking.
Yeah.
And yeah. that shot of her when the guy shows up is a little vase or something in the foreground catching the water and her in the background like going through her art and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When Nancy comes home from that, her roof is leaking too. But she lays down on the bed with it dripping right onto her face and she doesn't move. She just lets it drip onto her face.
Interesting.
And I feel like it's so much of like, you know, it's what you put out into the world coming back to mm-hmm. you. It's Sarah being like, okay, well, I'm going to put a bucket out and catch the leaky roof. And it's Nancy saying, I'm just going to lay under the roof because this is the hand I've been dealt and this is just
yeah.
what I have to do and there's nothing I can do.
Just laying down and like taking it.
Yeah. And just accepting it.
Yeah. Like, she's not a fighter. She's angry. Like, Nancy is angry, but she's not a fighter in the way that Sarah is.
Right.
Sarah is resilient. She stands up for herself.
Mm-hmm.
Even if she has moments where she backslides and takes on too much
mm-hmm.
and you can see she has a lot of remorse. She feels a lot of guilt. She's very much an empath and she takes on the emotions of the people around her.
Yeah.
Nancy doesn't, and that actually gives Sarah power, whereas Nancy tries to shut everyone and everything out and just try to control everything.
Yeah. Like, even when Chris first talks to her after, you know, they had their whole falling out, he asked, I'm sure you hate me. And she goes, no, I don't hate you.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how emotionally responsible of a 17-year-old to be like, you did this horrible thing, but no, I don't hate you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't. I would hate that guy.
Oh, yeah. No, I hate him now.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so I have a list of like witchy things that I did as a kid. And it's kind of like parallels what she thinks that they're doing, especially in their sleepovers.
Hell
those
yeah.
sleepovers were like so real.
Oh, yeah. So many seances, like
yes,
Ouija boards.
Love this is it. The content I'm looking for. Yes. So the light as a feather, stiff as a board. Did you ever play that?
I don't think I did, actually.
You
not,
didn't?
Not that specifically. I think that might have phased out by the time I was doing sleepovers.
Oh.
I feel like that wasn't really a big thing.
I remember being like a little kid, like kindergarten age, mm-hmm. and my older sister would have like these parties, which she was like 8 years old. And I was like, we're having parties. We had really bad parents. And they would play Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board. And I just remember being like glued like in the corner watching like in amazement, like, oh, I want to play that. And really believing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when everyone had their fingers under, it was like the two-finger thing.
Yeah.
And everyone would chant it at the same time. And no one fucking moved. No one got lifted. But like one person would like maybe their fingers moved up a little. And they're like, I don't know.
I feel
they
it.
Would,
it's working.
Yeah, yeah. They would say it's working. It's like there's no fucking way that worked.
Yeah. I am remembering now. So I never did it because my sister did it at one of her slumber parties and told me it didn't work. And I'm remembering now being like, well, I don't want to do it if it's like not going to work. Like,
yeah.
Like, what if she just didn't do it right? And like, maybe I'll do it right. But if it doesn't, that's going to be embarrassing. So I just shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But still, you know, Bloody Mary, all the rest of the stuff was mm-hmm. still big.
Oh, yeah. No, Bloody Mary definitely did that one. Scared the shit out of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing ever happened with that. But then, like, the days after going into the bathroom, not being able to, like, close the door, leaving the lights on, all that kind of stuff.
Checking behind the shower curtain just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then doing, like, Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever do Candyman?
Yes.
Yeah. It's all that stuff we do to, like, scare ourselves and try to, like, conjure up something else. Like outside of our reality.
What the hell was wrong with us? Knowing what
times.
We know now after watching this movie, what is wrong with us?
Yeah. No. Lots of hormones.
Yeah.
So other games that I played, I did like this one game where you were supposed to like put each other in a trance. Like where you would like go on the person's temples and like rub their temples and you would count them down, almost like hypnotizing them.
Oh,
did
I never
you ever
did this
do
one.
That?
No, are we going to do this when we're off mics? Is that what we're doing next?
I mean, let's see if we can conjure up the powers. But it was like that one was terrifying. I was older when I did that one. I was like definitely in my teenage years. No, I was still a preteen. I was still in elementary school when I played this one. But one person would lay on the ground and the other person would be like in a knelt position, mm-hmm. like behind them. And you would close your eyes. And the other person would put their hands on, like, fingers on your temple, and they would go round and round, and they would tell you, they would, like, come up with a scenery.
Oh my God, no, I did. I did do this.
You
I did this once. I had this happen, like, once.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, continue.
Yeah. But you would, on the temples, the person would rub up your temples, they would describe a scene. And you were supposed to go like deeper and deeper into this trance state. And they would tell you like there's a door, go open the door.
Mm-hmm.
And you, in your trance state, in your mind, you would go over, you would open the door. And there was supposed to, some other entity there
mm-hmm.
with you. And that could, if you did it the wrong way, it could follow you back home
mm-hmm.
to your dimension. So I remember scaring the shit out of myself with that. It was very much like the Insidious movies,
mm-hmm.
I would say. So you did it too?
I I did it once where I had like three friends who were like all pitching in on the story.
Oh, that's going to be jumbled up. It was always like me and one other person.
So this wasn't, okay, this wasn't, I don't think this was really them like trying to do the like a witchcraft fun thing. This was them like fucking with me, I think, because they told me like a really, I was like eight, like seven or eight maybe. And they like played out a scene of like my entire family getting murdered.
Oh my God. That's so horrible.
Like, by the time I didn't get to the point where there was a door and an end. I didn't get to that point because I got so upset that I started crying and I left.
Aww.
So they never did that with me again because they learned not to do that.
Okay. So did you ever do any casting of spells on anyone?
I really can't remember.
Like, you'd never even cast a spell on, like, a boy trying to, like, a love spell?
No, I did a lot of love potions.
Perfect. I want to hear about these love potions.
So, I mean, I feel like a lot of people had, you know, the bucket of water with whatever you could put in it making potions. And I don't know if I really believed I was a witch or if I just liked playing with dirt. But yeah, I did it right? a lot.
It was literally
just like a bucket of dirt that I'm stirring with a stick. Like, I'm so powerful.
Yeah. it's so real.
Yeah.
It's so real.
I made a lot of those. And
yeah. Like, I had a friend when we were preteens. She had a book on being a Wiccan. Ooh. And, like, different Wiccan, like, practices and stuff. So, like, we got candles. And she was, like, really into this where we would like mix our spit and like hair and all kinds of weird shit into some water mixture. I'm sure it was like water because we didn't have access to alcohol. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if we did, we probably would have put like wine. It would have been on wine or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But we would put these mixtures together. And I remember she had like this boy that she like was infatuated with, and she loved him, and she would try to put spells on him. Like, she would get his hair and put it in the mixture with her hair, like mixing them together.
Okay, see, this is what I mean by like I'm more into this stuff now than I was when I was a kid, because I literally have bags of my boyfriend's hair around the house for me to do things with.
You're saving it for, you know, eventually science is going to catch up enough where you can clone him
exactly.
One day.
Exactly. And I don't know, having a lock of someone's hair is supposed to be romantic, right?
Yeah, making a doll out of their hair, super romantic.
Yeah. I'll give his voodoo doll like a back rub or something. It can be nice. It doesn't all have to be bad witchcraft.
I never tried to put a spell on a man because I was like, I wanted them all to leave me the fuck alone. So like, if anything, I was going to put a hex on a bunch of people.
I admire that.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
I was like, you go make your love spell. I'm just going to sit over here and I'm going to put everyone, like a little piece of paper with everyone's name that I hate and tell them to leave me the fuck alone. Like, that was me as a preteen.
Oh, my God.
So this film deals with, like, some really hard topics that you have to, like, grapple with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on top of, like, all the teenage angst and stuff, there's sexual assault. There's moving and feeling isolated, which I think most people in their teenage years are going to feel very isolated. Mm-hmm. At some point, I don't know, for me, when I rewatched the film getting ready for this, like, I definitely had a lot of those feelings like invoked.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just like live back in my teenage brain, which is not something I want to do.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, I remember that. Like, because you rewatched the movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you have that feeling of like, oh God, I remember this?
More so the Nancy stuff and the Bonnie stuff where I was, I was just weird as a kid, you know, like specifically the Nancy stuff where I was just a hyperactive kid with an overactive imagination and would do and say some outlandish stuff and gained a bit of a reputation for being a weirdo. And the way everyone treats her and looks at her, and, you know, she doesn't always necessarily help herself out, but at some point that just becomes a defense mechanism because everyone's just so mean to you.
Yeah, no, I completely relate with that. I like, so you would say that you're more of a Nancy out of all of them.
Yeah.
I would say I was most like Rochelle.
Yeah.
Because I never really felt like I fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And she's targeted a lot in this movie. And she sees every, like, the effects of her spell.
Mm-hmm.
She can't even, like, her reflection even looks away from her.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was really interesting with Rochelle, because initially when they're all talking about what they want and they're making their first wishes, what Rochelle says is to not hate those who hate me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she says, you know, especially Lizzie, but her original wish wasn't, I want her to get what's coming to her. Or, like, for something bad to happen, it's just to forgive her.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really turn into, no, I want this bitch to go down, until they kind of get a little more into it and they just have their motivations corrupted a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Well, even in that spell where she wants something to happen to Lizzie, she only wants something to happen to Lizzie if
she
Lizzie,
doesn't stop.
Yeah.
Doesn't, she doesn't leave her alone. Yeah.
So it's only in reaction. It's not like she's trying to get vengeance. She's like
I just wanted to leave me alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Lizzie would have left her alone, nothing would have happened to her.
Do you think Lizzie deserved what she got?
100%.
Okay.
That bitch needed to lose her hair.
Yeah.
Fuck her.
It'll grow back.
Yeah.
I think if it grows back, she definitely deserves it. If
you can wear a wig.
Yeah.
There are people with no hair. She can wear a wig.
They live perfectly fine lives. Yeah.
Yeah. She didn't have to go around looking like the, I don't know, like Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Like,
looking like elderly Pearl.
she made her choice to go around like that after she started losing her hair. She could have used a wig.
She's clearly, like, got resources. She could have figured something out.
Oh, so there are jokes about the girls' like powers and like that as they got more powerful, their skirts got shorter.
Oh.
Did you notice that, like, the aesthetic, how in the beginning they were, like, very much, like, fit in with everyone else? They were wearing the schoolgirl uniform, like, those long skirts. They didn't follow dress code the way it was supposed to be.
Right, like, but even when they go on that first little excursion, they're all wearing, like, the long flowy dresses and dressed a little more conservatively.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, by the end, they're all just out there in their mini skirts. That's so true. I didn't even, like, I feel like I saw it, but I didn't, like, put it together. That's so, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
So I guess, like, Rachel True joked that as their powers grew, their skirts shrunk. And I will say that as a woman, or even as, like, a teenage girl, I definitely felt more powerful when I was wearing shorter, like, a shorter skirt, or showed a little bit of midriff. Like, I was like, this is my power.
Yeah.
This is me owning my body and being, I get to choose what I wear.
Yeah.
Like, there was something really powerful about that.
Yeah.
Did you ever, like, feel like that as a teenager?
Probably too much, if we're being real. But yeah, I definitely think that that's, you know, another way that, like, young women have to find things that they can have control over, because, you know, you can't wear stuff like that to school most of the time. And you always have your dad of, like, you're not leaving the house and that kind of stuff. And so it's your way of being like, okay, well, this is me owning my body and doing what I want with it.
Yeah. And gaining that control back.
Yeah. Yeah, like, definitely.
I was definitely, like, if someone told me that I couldn't wear something, I'd be like, well, I'm going to wear it now.
Yeah,
like,
I'm wearing it every day. I'm trying to take it off of me. You don't
want me to wear a corset? Like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like, look at all the cleavage I have.
Yeah.
Like, this is power to me. But, you know, and it's like the slut shaming that goes along with that. But it's not portrayed in society as being powerful mm-hmm. for someone to dress like quote unquote slutty.
Right. You know?
But as a girl and trying to like find your identity and your sexuality and all these things that are going on, like it was very powerful to say, you know, I can put on this short skirt and this tank top and show a little bit of skin. And I know that like I'm owning this fucking room.
Yeah.
Like,
and even if it wasn't always, you know, appropriate, I have every person's attention.
Yeah.
And I have that power now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very empowering.
Yeah. And especially, you know, being catcalled from cars at 11 years old walking down the street. Like,
Jesus. Yes.
Yeah. Like you get to a point where you're just like, all right, this is mine now. Like, mm-hmm. this is for me to determine when I am perceived this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I always flicked off those cars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Get into, you know, I still flick people off sometimes.
All the time. I get nervous flicking people off when I'm driving now because I'm like, someone's going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
These people are crazy.
The road rage is real.
It's insane.
So, Manon. Did I say that? Manon?
Manon? Yeah, like they don't pronounce the last N. I still can't even really do, but it's like Manon.
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 Oh, that is how they say it.
Yeah.
Manon.
Manon.
Okay. So Manon is actually not a god of any right. kind.
Yeah, they made it up for the movie.
Mm-hmm. Which I respect that because they didn't want to be offensive to anyone who might actually practice like witchcraft of any sort.
Yeah.
And so they didn't want to be offend their gods.
Yeah.
So they came up with Manon.
I think it was a good name. Like it was a believable name.
It's actually, so Manon is actually a common French woman's name.
Oh. Love that, actually.
So I thought that was interesting.
That's so fascinating that it's a French woman's name and it's a movie about female empowerment, but the god is still male. Like, mm-hmm. They still say he.
Yeah.
And like he is entering.
Well, it's still the 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Only ask for so much progress.
Yeah. We can only do so much at a time. We still have a lot.
Baby
we still
steps.
Have a lot to do.
Yeah.
So some themes in the movie, like we've got our abuse of power and how they lose their powers because they abuse them.
Mm-hmm.
You lose it. If you abuse it, you lose it.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Sarah says right after when they go to the magic shop and Nancy buys the book to invoke Manon, Sarah says like, I used to hallucinate snakes and bugs everywhere and I'd open my eyes and they'd still be there. They wouldn't go away. They're everywhere.
Mm, so that's why Nancy does that to
snakes
her.
And bugs everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so, I loved that like Nancy's animal was a snake
mm-hmm.
and like they do so much with it. It's so good.
Yeah. And that could either be Nancy taking notes and using that to torment Sarah.
Right.
Or it could be Sarah had a premonition.
Oh. Oh my
could be either God. Because she is supposed to have premonitions. Like that's supposedly one of her powers.
Yeah.
Well,
this when she said she used to hallucinate it, she said it was right before she attempted her it was right before her suicide attempt. She was constantly hallucinating.
Yeah. And that's actually, that explains a lot as to her motivation in the self-harm because she felt like she was going crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sure
just felt tormented by mm-hmm. all this weird shit happening to you. Yeah.
Hmm.
But then right after she says that, Nancy replies and says, You know, the serpent is a very powerful being. You should respect it.
Wow. Well,
should she? Should she, Nancy? Should she respect the serpent? You're talking about yourself, aren't you?
Yeah. You want her to respect you. Know your place, bitch. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically. So in this scene where the four girls arrive at the beach to invoke the spirit of Manon, they each carry an animal that represents themselves or their wants. So Rochelle carries a clownfish, which is supposed to be her passion about her passion's diving, and she can't enjoy diving or she can't enjoy swimming as long as Laura Lizzie is bullying her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bonnie carries a butterfly, and it represents the beauty and adoration she has longed for. Transform into the beautiful butterfly she sees herself as.
Have her outer beauty reflect her inner beauty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sarah carries a lovebird representing her desire for Chris. I was like, come on. I was a little disappointed in her with that
one. I didn't realize
one.
It was specifically a lovebird. I didn't look up what kind of bird it was. It could have been, you know, anything. But
yeah.
It was the 90s.
Yeah. And then Nancy carries a snake, like he said, and that's symbolic of rebirth, transformation, and immortality, as Nancy wants a better life for herself and her mother, as well as power and leadership for herself. She's very power hungry.
Yeah.
So I came up with an animal that I would have brought to the beach with me that day if I was part of the coven.
What's your animal?
So my animal would be a rat.
Elaborate.
Huh?
Elaborate.
Okay, so I'll elaborate. So in my teenage years, and I used to actually have rats as pets, and I saw them as, like, they're very smart, mm-hmm. and they're actually very clean, despite what others believe. And they can also be really affectionate.
Okay.
So a lot of times they are misconstrued as these dirty, like, gross mm-hmm. creatures. But they're actually not that, really.
Okay, yeah.
So in astrology, the rat is the first animal in the cycle, which is believed to usher in a period of new beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
And people born in the year of the rat are said to be smart, quick-witted, and adaptable. And people with the rat as a power animal are often go-getting. They're willing to take on projects, like a bunch of projects all at once, which is kind of fitting for me.
Well, you mean like your horror podcast and your trivia?
Yeah.
And
Seems a little relevant. Yeah, it's a little relevant. So I chose the rat. And I was even, like, when I chose my animal, I was thinking, like, what would my animal have been as a teenager?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I don't think, like, I would choose a rat for myself today. Yeah. But
I still get it. It's still, yeah.
But it still fits.
Yeah.
So what was your animal? I know I gave you some homework.
So I have been trying to answer this question for 30 years, and I still have never come up with a decent answer. Part of me wants to say a dolphin.
A dolphin?
Yeah, but,
oh my God.
But
that's
like,
so
I'm imagining like the scene and me pushing like a 300,000-gallon tank with a dolphin onto that beach, and it's a little hard to take it seriously. They are very intelligent, and I'm not sitting here like, oh, I'm so smart, but you know, I value intelligence. And,
yeah.
They're also the only other mammals that have sex for pleasure.
This is true. And they kill sharks.
Hey, yo. Yeah.
They kill sharks. So they're really powerful.
And then my other one that I thought of, and this is just silly, but a bumblebee. I love bumblebees. And I'm also a queen and important for the planet and constantly need to be saved.
So yes. Oh, my God. I love that.
Thank you.
Bumblebees are so cute. They've got, I mean, especially the bumblebee, because he's like really got the big fat butt.
Yeah.
So cute. And they just like they get stuck in flowers. I always see pictures or videos of them like getting high on their supply of nectar.
They're just sweet.
Yeah.
They just want to hang out and be around flowers, and you know, that's all any of us want, really.
Yeah, I like that. I like the bumblebee.
It's a lot easier to carry than a dolphin.
Yeah, no, a lot easier.
It'll fit in a jar.
So the next theme that I have here in the movie is toxic masculinity, which we kind of started talking about before we recorded.
Yes.
So the movie conveys a message, how it's, you know, their ego is tied up in it, and it ends up being extremely harmful,
mm-hmm.
not just to the people around them, but also to them.
Yeah.
And Chris is like the archetype. By the time he's under Sarah's spell, he's already done some pretty horrible things and proven himself to be like a shitty guy.
Yeah.
But then these actions are just like amplified by three after she mm-hmm. does the spell.
Exactly.
I know we kind of had like a little side conversation about him beforehand, so now we can kind of get into it. So what did you think about Chris as a character?
So I can be easily swayed, but I was a little conflicted about Chris.
He's a layered character.
Yeah,
because it's not so straightforward of right and wrong with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, like, because I feel like he is an archetype of, like, you know, a teenage boy jock dude.
Mm-hmm.
He does do some unforgivable shit, but there are moments before he's under the spell and before, you know, he spreads a rumor about Sarah where he seems genuinely sweet. And yes, I know he's being manipulative and he's being a boy and whatever. But Sarah says at the very end, like, I really don't think he was that bad of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me is like, maybe he really wasn't that bad. Like, yeah, he was a teenage boy jock, but he didn't deserve to die, you know?
Yeah, like, I'd definitely say that he didn't deserve to die. In the beginning of the movie where he goes up to her, and in that scene he asks her to go to the practice and mm-hmm. watch him. Did you notice the number on his jersey?
I did not notice what number it was.
It was 86. 86ing something is like, oh, getting rid of it.
Yeah.
So like it was a foreshadowing of like they're gonna have to like off him later on. Sarah holds a lot of guilt, and she does it with more than just Chris, but when it comes to Chris and his actions and things, like, he's not a good guy, but I think she definitely sees, like, if it wasn't for this spell, he probably wouldn't have tried to assault her.
Right.
You can see, like, there are a lot of really uncharacteristic things that he does mm-hmm. once he's under her spell. Like, she's able to, like, boss him around.
Yeah.
When they're in the pews and tell him, like, look forward. All these things that, like, she literally never would have done.
Sit.
And yeah.
He sits.
Yeah. She is barking commands at mm-hmm. him like he's a dog.
Yeah.
And this is something that you know he wouldn't have done based on his right. actions previously. I mean, while he's not a good guy by any means, I don't think that he would have taken things as far as he did in the movie.
Yeah.
Had the spell not been there. That whole dynamic with the three of them, like Nancy obviously still has something for Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And she feels like she wants to get revenge because he rejected her.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, when she first goes to that party after he tried to assault Sarah, she goes there under like the guise that she's going to get back at him. She's going right. to defend Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't.
Yeah,
she
that's not what she's doing at all.
And she disguises herself as Sarah because she wants him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the illusion is broken and the real Sarah comes in, then he's like, what the fuck? And he pushes her off.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's when she does the whole, like, you're nothing, you're no one, and, mm-hmm. you know, and then murders him. And the interesting thing about that, too, is that Nancy, up until then, Chris was the villain in the story. It makes him appear more innocent with the more of a villain she becomes.
Right.
And then suddenly, like, especially when you come to the scene where the doors open on the patio in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm sorry. Like, he's apologizing. And then Sarah's like, he said he's sorry. He really means it. But Nancy's like, she doesn't know her limits. She right. doesn't know when to stop. She keeps pushing and pushing and pushing until she pushes them
right out a window.
right out the window. Three stories high and killing him. So it was very sad.
Yeah. I think there's so much about Nancy being jealous of Sarah mm-hmm. and like the life she has and like the privilege she has, you know, as, you know, you see the house she's in and like mm-hmm. she has both parents and her dad's incredibly supportive of her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so interesting. It's like this crux of the movie where she's about to get what she wants and the only way she can actually get it is by transforming herself into Sarah.
Yeah. No, I think she is very jealous of her. And even when it comes to the magic, mm-hmm. like with just the three of them, they didn't have magic.
Yeah, they couldn't get anything done. And it wasn't until Sarah came in that they actually had power. Mm-hmm.
You know, she's leeching off mm-hmm. of Sarah's power.
Yeah. Well, and also the thing that the store clerk says at the magic shop, it's Sarah's first time there, is that Sarah's, maybe she's a natural witch and your power comes from within.
When Sarah does the binding spell, the first time it doesn't work, but the second time it does. I just found that so powerful mm-hmm. watching her, and it just showed so much of like what her character was. She didn't want to harm Nancy. She wanted to bind Nancy from harming herself and harming others.
Yeah.
And she's like wrapping that like
it's, the white ribbon around yeah. it so delicately. And
it's like a picture of her or something.
Yeah.
Funny story. So my dad is like kind of super harmful. Basically, there was a time where I was like setting boundaries mm-hmm. with my parents, specifically my dad at this time. And we're talking and I start telling him, I bind you from doing harm against others and harm against yourself. Yeah. And I said it to him like several times. And he is like a very depressive person too. Mm-hmm. And really, I think what that ended up doing, because it kind of worked. And I told him, I was like, have you ever seen The Craft? I was like, that's what I'm doing. I'm putting a spell on you. I bind you. Mm-hmm. It's like, I bind you from doing harm against others and harm against yourself. And I kind of explained it to him. And at that point, it was really funny because I was kind of like binding him from doing harm to any more emotional harm to me. Mm-hmm. And it actually kind of worked.
Yeah.
Like he stopped a lot of the stuff that I was telling him that I was like, you need to stop doing this stuff. This is what the implications of that is. He really stopped doing a lot of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like, it's about communication and being clear. Yeah. But in my way, and I was joking when I was like doing the binding spell, it was mm-hmm. completely a joke, but it was also like, I'm for real.
Yeah. Like, because like the intention is there of like, mm-hmm. this is what I need. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and being able to communicate that. Yeah.
As a young impressionable teenager, mm-hmm. like that spell in particular stayed with me. And I was always like, if someone was harming me in any way, emotionally, physically, anything, like mm-hmm. I would, that it was like my go-to chant.
Yeah. And it also like it speaks so much to, you know, as we were saying before, like Sarah's emotional maturity of like she could have been like, okay, well, I'll tear this bitch back down. But mm-hmm. she was just like, I just want her and all of us to be okay. I just don't want anyone else to get hurt.
Yeah.
It's like, good girl.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
When the girls first came to the house, Sarah wouldn't use magic on them, do any spells to defend herself. She just kept running away from them. And they were like, why won't she use magic?
Yeah.
Eventually she does. And I couldn't figure out what the switch was.
Well, I think when it came to that scene in particular, Nancy, Bonnie, and Rochelle, they all gave in to the dark side of the power of Mana.
Yeah, I guess they did start making it pretty clear that they wanted to kill her.
Yeah. They were,
Maybe I missed that the first time through.
They had made themselves so much more powerful because, right, in the woman in the shop and everything, she tells them, it depends on where you take it. If you take it to a dark place, it's going to be dark. If you take it to a place of goodness and light, then that's what it will be for you.
Yeah, she says, the only good or bad is in the heart of the witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're getting their power more by being dark and going into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah, I think at that point, hadn't found the light yet. She hadn't found her power in being the lighter side of the magic. And she doesn't realize it until she's later up there in the room and that, you know, she starts calling Amanon. She has the picture of her mom, which is like supposed to be the goodness in her as well.
Right.
Comes back and she's able to fight back and actually be successful with her binding spell and come back and tell Nancy, like, make the others see 3x3 the harm that they've caused. Because she doesn't want to do harm to them, but she wants them to see
the harm they're causing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then she's able to then come back and tell Nancy, like, Manah's mad. He's angry with you.
Mm-hmm.
You've been misusing your power.
Right.
And in that sense, like, she's finding her power at that point.
One other thing that the shop lady said when Chris spreads the rumor and Nancy says, I think you should let him suffer. The shop lady says, it's not for you to judge suffering.
What it comes down to is, like, you only have the power to control your own actions.
Yes, exactly.
So even when they try to control other people or other things, it always backfired on them.
Right.
Because really, you can only control yourself.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think I've covered about everything. So thank you so much for being my first female guest.
Thank you so much for having me on this female empowerment episode.
Yes, I'm so excited about this episode coming out. And just like everything that we talked about, I think is so real and just relive my adolescence all over again.
Witchy adolescence.
Yeah. But yeah. So thank you for being here. And now it's time. Let's go get some food.
Hell yeah.
What's going on? Why aren't you dead? You came to me. Saved me. Oh, and he wanted me to give you a message. You're in deep shit. He says you've abused what he's given you, and now you're gonna have to pay the price.
Now it's time to get into the true crime of it all. Producer Doug Wick and screenwriter Peter Filardi wanted to create a movie about female empowerment. Witchcraft is an age-old metaphor for talking about women with power and then burning them at the stake. There's also the connection of women to nature in terms of our ability to produce life, hence Mother Nature nurtures everyone and everything. Director Andrew Fleming did a lot of research into paganism. He wanted to show a more realistic depiction of the way magic is practiced in the 20th century. Let me know if anything has changed in the comments section. They did a lot of research into Wicca. With the help of some experts, they were able to create a narrative around Wiccan practices that would make it real. Or real enough not to be offensive to those who practice witchcraft of its many variations. Some of the literature used to research was Scott Cunningham's book, Earth Power, Goddesses in Every Woman by Jean Bolin, and Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth. At the time, when Filardi was working on writing the script for this movie, he was immersed in a world of teen Satanism and its connection to hallucinogens, metal, and magic. In 1984, just 2 years before The Craft was released, Ricky Casso was in the news for murdering his friend. It was widely believed that Casso was a Satanist. This was the height of the satanic panic, making its rounds with anything dark and edgy being seen as worshipping the devil. So rock music, Dungeons and Dragons, all those things were signs that the youth was out of control, on drugs, having sex, and sacrificing their friends. Hail Satan. Of course, that is all conjecture, and only Satan can judge me. And with that, I have my true crime connection, Ricky Casso. Richard Allen, Ricky Casso Jr., also known as the Acid King, was an American murderer who killed his 17-year-old friend, Gary Lars, in Northport, New York, on June 19, 1984. Two other teenagers, Jimmy Choriano and Albert Quinones, were present at the murder, which took place in the Azteca woods of Northport, while all four were under the influence of what they believed to be mescaline, but was most likely LSD. The murder became a sensational news story due to the alleged torture of Lawers and the supposed occult aspects of the murder. The murder took place during a period known as the Satanic Panic, when there was much public concern over the effects of satanic and occult content in heavy metal music and in role-playing games. Casso was wearing an AC/DC shirt at the time of his arrest and was a fan of groups such as Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, and Ozzy Osbourne. If you ask me, he should have been wearing a Slayer or Merciful Fate shirt. Casso had a rough childhood. While seemingly perfect on paper with both of his parents working at a high school, the reality of his home life was anything but. He was often thrown out and living on the streets of Northport, New York as a young teenager. So, child abuse and neglect. He often took drugs, mainly marijuana, hashish, LSD, PCP, and purple microdots of what he believed to be mescaline, but was most likely low-grade LSD. He was typically a user of these drugs, but would occasionally sell his own supply. Casso was acquainted with the members of a loosely organized group of friends who sold marijuana and referred to themselves as the Knights of the Black Circle. After the murder, several newspapers and television journalists incorrectly reported the Knights as being a satanic cult. There were many fear-mongering headlines about him celebrating Walburgis Night, which, by the way, is a Christian-based holiday. I guess the fact that it was supposedly, took place in the Amityville Horror House is supposed to make it evil, but don't even get me started on that house of falsities. He had expressed interest in Anton LaVey's book, The Satanic Bible, but if he ever read it, he would know it's satanic satire. His parents get to say they tried when they admitted him to the South Oak Psychiatric Hospital for drug rehabilitation and psychiatric care. I guess they earned their Parent of the Year award when their son was in the hospital for pneumonia, and they tried once again to send him to a psychiatric hospital. The conclusion, though, of the doctor was that Casso exhibited antisocial behavior, but was neither psychotic nor a violent danger, and he was released upon recovering from his bout of pneumonia. If you're a parent and wondering why I'm being so harsh with them, well, it's because I'm a parent. I would never put a child on the streets. As a parent, you are the guardian and protector of that child. By casting them out instead of helping them, you leave them to the wolves. What else do you expect them to do? I'm not trying to relive childhood trauma, but I had parents and family members that kicked out teenage children. It never ended well, and it was never the kid's fault. Mr. and Ms. Casso should have been arrested, and if this crime happened today, I have a feeling they would have been. End rant. Now for the victim of this story. There was a conflict between Casso and Gary Lawers over 10 bags of stolen PCP. When Casso confronted him, he returned 5 of the 10 bags and promised to repay $50 for the 5 bags that were used. After this incident, Lawers became a target for Casso, with Lawers being the victim of beatings on 4 separate occasions. I'm afraid it only gets worse from here. On the night of the murder, he visited the small gazebo in Cow Harbor Park and borrowed a radio from a friend. He then invited Lars to get high with him, Jimmy Choyano, and Albert Quinones. The group walked to Azteca Woods, set up camp, and ingested several doses or hits of what they believed to be mescaline. The drugs they ingested were tablets called purple microdots, which was likely LSD. The teens also smoked several bags of PCP before attempting to start a small fire, but all of the available firewood was too wet. Lars used his socks as well as his sleeves from his denim jacket as kindling to start the fire. At some point during the night, the situation escalated into violence. Casso scuffled with Lars, bit him on the neck, and stabbed him in the chest. Casso continued his assault on Lars. Quinones initially claimed that Choriano helped Casso and held Lars during the attack. During subsequent testimony provided under immunity, Quinones claimed that Choriano did not assist Casso. Lars was stabbed somewhere between 17 and 36 times, and his eyeballs were possibly sliced out during the stabbing. That's like more of a rumor. After the attack, Casso and Choriano covered Lars' body with leaves and small branches and left him in the woods. In the aftermath, Casso bragged about the murder to friends. Casso claims Satan manifested in the form of a black crow after killing Lars, and the crow had cawed, something he interpreted as Satan's approval of the murder. Casso even brought several disbelieving teens to view Lars' body before he and Choriano returned to the woods to bury the decomposing remains in a shallow grave. However, it wasn't until 2 weeks went by, on July 1st, that the murder was reported to the police via an anonymous tip. On July 4th, 1984, police used dogs to search Azteca Woods and recovered the decomposing and mutilated body of Gary Lars. Casso and Choriano were arrested the next day. On July 7th, Casso died of suicide by hanging himself in his cell. Jimmy Choriano signed two confessions that he later recanted. Quinones gave a witness account that Choriano helped Casso during the murder, but later denied this during his testimony at Choriano's trial. Due to Quinones' drugged state at the time of the killing, his testimony was brought into question and Choriano was acquitted of second-degree murder in a trial by jury in April 1985. When it comes to all the satanic panic stuff and Casso actually feeding into that narrative, it's attention-seeking is how I see it. I'm sure the drugs like made him delusional, especially when you're doing things like LSD and PCP. I'm sure he felt like he saw and heard shit, but that had nothing to do with Satan. That had way more to do with the fact that he had a malleable brain that was still forming and being destroyed by drugs. So that's where I stand on that. Let's end on a high note. If you would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene. I'm also thinking about making mini episodes called Horror Highlights, where people email me with movies that could fit into my theme of the month, but I'm not covering. This is a way to categorize horror movies and maybe find something new. You can email me your movie suggestions at screamqueenpodcaster@gmail.com. That's podcast with the ER at the end. I'm also looking forward to MegaCon coming to Orlando from February 6th through the 9th. I got my 4-day pass early because those sell out before the event And I'm personally looking forward to cosplaying iconic Scream Queens and attending the Indie Horror Junkie Film Festival that's happening. Indie horror movies, Screamboat, The Inn, and Mutilator 2 will be screening. And there will also be a Q&A section with a panel of producers and cast members. Skeet Ulrich will also be there. He plays Chris Hooker in The Craft, and he's best known for his role as Billy Loomis in Scream. That man ages like fine wine. This is a weekly podcast with new episodes out every Thursday. All the research, writing, and audio is done by yours truly. This is a one-woman show, and I'm doing my very best. I have a monthly horror event at Conduit in Orlando, Florida. This episode will come out 3 days after my last event. We have our theme of threes to help support yours truly. These three rituals will help me spread the good word of horror. Please rate, review, and subscribe. This ritual only works if you do all three things. So please do so and do it often. Remember, be careful what you wish for. Until next time, goodbye.